Happy Thanksgiving. We feel we have a lot to be thankful for, including that you are here. We're going to keep an eye on the news, especially in the Middle East. Also, a look at how marketers are positioning ads as news reports on reputable online sites. And our annual pilgrimage to Vermont to see the snow geese with my late Uncle Locke. It's become kind of the here and now Thanksgiving Day, Groundhog Day. But we also start today with a conversation about family and loss. Maybe there's an empty chair at your table, or maybe you dread one in the future. In that case, our first guest has a gentle suggestion. Start reading. When Will Schwalbe's mother, Marianne, was undergoing chemotherapy in the cancer ward of Memorial Sloan Kettering Hospital in New York, he asked her a simple question. So, what are you reading? She had pancreatic cancer. She would die 2 years later. But that question launched a sort of book club of two, and through their reading, they found a way to say goodbye. Will Schwalbe tells their story in the lovely new book, The End of Your Life Book Club. It's part portrait of a remarkable woman, part primer on dealing with terminal illness in a family, part book list. And Will Schwalbe joins us in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Robin.
Quite something. Now, you worked in publishing. You worked with books. You edited books. Your mom, as Charlotte would say, if she could spin the web, what a mom. Just tell us a little bit about her.
My mom was a terrific mom. She was an educator. She was director of admissions at Radcliffe and then at Harvard.
The first female director of admissions.
Director of admissions when they combined the admissions office, and mm-hmm. she loved that job.
Yeah.
And that's when we were living in Cambridge. And then my folks moved back to New York City, which is where they were from. And she became first guidance counselor at a high school. And then she was head of a girls' high school. And then in her 50s, something remarkable happened, which is she discovered the cause of refugees.
Yeah.
And she wound up devoting the last two decades of her life to the cause of refugees. She traveled all over the world to some of the real danger spots, some of the most dire places, and was founding director of something called, that's now called the Women's Refugee Commission.
Just stunning. She picks up your sister and says, we're going to...
They went to the Thai-Lao border to work with Hmong refugees. It was such a bizarre story because one day a postcard arrived, this mysterious postcard. And it was when my mother was head of this girls' high school. And it said, my name is Sister Mater. I'm a nun on the Thai-Lao border, and I need your help. And what that postcard led to was a couple-year correspondence and mom taking a leave from her job. My sister just graduated from college, and the two of them, my mom said to my dad, I love you dearly, but I'm going away for a couple months. And they went to work with Hmong refugees on this really extraordinary, dire, amazing refugee camp, and it changed both their lives.
Yeah. Well, and she still remained this very dignified educator from Manhattan, but she would go to these far-flung places. She had a project she passionately believed in. She wanted to raise money for a national library and cultural center at Kabul University in Afghanistan, and so she was doing this. As your story unfolds, one of her fellow board members in that effort to build the library was David Rode, the New York Times journalist who had been kidnapped. He's captured and in captivity. While your story unfolds, she seems more concerned about his getting out. But this idea of reading books, it's something you'd always done. There's not a bucket list sense to this. It's not like you're in a hurry to do this. You've always done this.
That's absolutely right. I mean, we always read books. We always asked each other, what are you reading? What are you reading? It was always the big question between us. We'd always talked about books when we were stressed or anxious, but also we were both such passionate readers that we just loved talking about books. And after mom was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, there were all these doctor appointments, and my dad and my sister and my brother and I all took turns going with her to them. And I usually went with her to chemo, very often went with her to chemo. And so we had hours at a stretch, and we wound up talking about books all the time.
And amazing how many times books will correlate with your life. I mean, it's just, I mean, as you lay this out, it's like, wow. So it became a way to talk about what was happening without directly talking about it. I'm thinking of Wallace Stegner's Crossing to Safety, one of the first books of your new little book club. Two couples, one of the wives is dying from cancer. And through talking about that book, you came to understand how your mom felt your dad would do after
exactly.
she died.
It allowed us to explore, I mean, really one of the most difficult topics that either one of us could ever imagine. And I was able to say to her when we were reading Crossing to Safety, the character's name was Larry, and I was able to say, Mom, do you think Larry's going to be okay? And Mom said, I think Larry's going to be sad, but I think he's going to be okay. And that was really how we talked about how my father would do after mom was gone.
You read the late, great David Halberstam's Korean War book, The Coldest Winter.
That was such an important book for us. And that book, which is just a masterpiece about the Korean War, about the veterans of the Korean War, about that horrible conflict. And after that book was published, so many people said they had a father or a grandfather who was a Korean War veteran who had never been able to talk about the conflict, but who simply gave them a copy of Halberstam's The Coldest Winter and said, now you'll understand. And it was an example of how books can speak for you when a subject is just too hard to approach.
Right. And by the way, we're going to have a list of all the books that you and I are about to talk about and all the books that you and your mom talked about. It's a pretty long list at herenow.org. Joan Didion's Year of Magical Thinking, which is about the death of her husband, or Marilynne Robinson's Gilead, one of our favorite authors of all time, but it's letters from a dying parent to his son. Alice Munro's short story, Free Radicals. It's about a woman named Nita who's dying of cancer and also was a book reader. But can you read that passage for us?
Oh,
first?
Here's the passage from Alice Munro from Free Radicals. And in this passage, Munro describes the way Nita reads. She hadn't been just a once-through reader, either. Brothers Karamazov, Mill on the Floss, Wings of the Dove, Magic Mountain, over and over again. She would pick one up, thinking that she would just read that special bit, and find herself unable to stop until the whole thing was redigested. She read modern fiction, too, always fiction. She hated to hear the word escape used about fiction. She might have argued, not just playfully, that it was real life that was the escape. But this was too important to argue about.
Will Schwalbe reading from Alice Munro's story, Free Radicals, one of the many readings he shared with his mom while she struggled with cancer. He tells their story in his new memoir, The End of Your Life Book Club. And Will, Free Radicals, your mom wanted you to read that story.
Yeah. It's funny because Nita is a character in this story who could not be more different from my mother. But that passage perfectly described the way my mother felt about books. She felt books weren't an escape, that reading was one of the really hugest things that you could do in life, and that books were really how you knew what you needed to do in your own life and in the world.
But we just got to wonder, I can hear people saying, but wait a minute, Nita's dying of cancer.
Yes.
And Joan Didion's husband is dying of cancer, and Marilynne Robinson's main character in Gilead is dying. How did you read these? I mean, how did you read these things with each other?
Well, it really was that books were not an escape for either one of us. They were how we dealt with what was most important. So it was very natural that we would both gravitate towards books where someone was dying or dying of cancer. In fact, what was difficult to read were what my mother termed silly books, books that weren't really about anything, that didn't have characters that you cared about, that weren't well written. Those she had trouble reading. But books that dealt with big themes, courage, death, those were the books she wanted to read when she knew she had a limited amount of time left.
And for those who are listening who are thinking, I don't know if I could do that, or I don't know if I want to suggest that to my mother who I'm taking to chemotherapy, I mean, would you have to know this about your loved one before you suggested these books?
There's a point in the book where I tell a story of I had a book actually in manuscript that I thought might be just too direct, too painful for my mother, and it was Randy Pausch's book, The Last Lecture.
Sure.
And Randy, in the book, when he wrote the book with Jeff Zaslow, was dying of pancreatic cancer, which is the cancer my mother had. Yeah. So what I did with that, I was visiting her at the time, and I just left it on a table, and then I went out for a couple of hours. And I thought, if she wants to read it, she will, and if she doesn't, she won't. And she devoured it.
Yeah. Well, there was the John Updike collection, My Father's Tears and Other Stories. There's a scene from the title story. Your mom said it was her favorite. And she actually said to you, this is my favorite. It's about death.
Yes.
You know, as she's dying. And Updike is talking about people at a 55th high school reunion and how they see themselves. Could you read that for us?
The list of our deceased classmates on the back of the program grows longer. The class beauties have gone to fat or bony cronehood. The sports stars and non-athletes alike move about with the aid of pacemakers and plastic knees, retired and taking up space at an age when most of our fathers were considerately dead. But we don't see ourselves that way, as lame and old. We see kindergarten children, the same round, fresh faces, the same cup ears and long-lashed eyes. We hear the gleeful shrieking during elementary school recess and the seductive saxophones and muted trumpets of the locally bred swing bands that serenaded the blue-lit gymnasium during high school dances.
You know, I read that, I'm thinking, that's not about death. That's about how she sees herself living right now. That's who she is.
Yes. It was a passage that was so meaningful to her, I think, because when people looked at her, they saw a woman who had been undergoing treatment, chemotherapy for pancreatic cancer for almost 2 years solid. They saw her gray hair. They saw how thin she was and how frail. But that's not how she saw herself. She saw herself as the young woman, the educator, the refugee advocate, the mother that she'd always been. And when she saw her old friends, they saw her the same way.
It'd be hard to put that in words, but I'm thinking, there it is.
There it is.
Right there in that
Updike,
paragraph.
So beautiful. And Updike, in fact, had been a classmate of hers at Harvard Radcliffe.
Well, I'm not surprised, because everyone knew your mother. It just worked out that way. We were asking, what's the proper etiquette? And when it comes to book clubs and people who are dying. And one book you read is The Etiquette of Illness by Susan Halpern. And, you said it gave you really good advice on dealing with someone with cancer. Give us one of the tips.
Well, the Etiquette of Illness was such an important book to us, a nonfiction book by this remarkable woman, Susan Halpern. And it really starts with the best tip of all, which is not to say to someone, even your mother, how are you feeling? Because that's very intrusive, and some days someone might want to talk about it, and some days they might want to talk about anything but. So it teaches you to say, do you want to talk about how you're feeling? And then my mother could say, not today, or yes, I do.
I think I sort of take this as a tip as well. In addition to the books you were reading, you wrote a blog. It was purportedly from you, however your mother would tell you exactly what to say. But this way you could get out how she was doing without having to answer all the requests about how she was doing.
The blog turned out to be really an incredible gift to all of us, because she had so many friends and so many people who loved her, and they wanted to know how she was doing, but they didn't want to bug her or bug us all the time. So we were able to update people about her progress. We were able sometimes to say the books we were reading, and we're able to say things like, mom's doing fine this week, but she can't answer her emails, or calls aren't good this week. But it was also gave mom a little mini platform for her views. And one of the last blog posts she insisted I write was to say that she was going into hospice, which was acknowledging that the end was coming near and that everybody needed to push for health care reform.
Will Schwalbe talking about his mom, Mary Ann, and the books and thoughts they shared as she struggled with pancreatic cancer. His memoir is called The End of Your Life Book Club. What books are you thankful for? Let us know, hereandnow.org. Back in a minute with more with Will, Here and Now. Welcome back to our Thanksgiving Day conversation with Will Schwalbe, author of The End of Your Life Book Club. It's about a book club of two, Will and his mother, Mary Ann, who is battling cancer. The books were conversation starters, and Will, one of the themes was your mom as a woman, one who had many firsts. So you read Susan Peterson's book about British feminist Eleanor Rathbone, Sheila Weller's Girls Like Us. This is about singer-songwriters Carole King, Joni Mitchell, Carly Simon. After which, your mom popped out with, I don't think it's fair that stay-at-home moms are treated any differently than moms who work.
That gave us a way to talk about what it was like for her to be one of the first, quote-unquote, working mothers. Mom actually hated the phrase working mothers because she said no one ever talked about working fathers. Yeah. And we'd never had a conversation about what it was like to have a full-time job and a husband who worked and three children. And it was really through that book and those conversations that I found out but she'd really been exhausted for the better part of my childhood.
Well, and this is where she gets to tell a story about this high school that she went to in New York. Sounds very progressive. There was a woman who told her, you young ladies are going to be able to do anything. And she went back to this woman.
Yes, it's such a funny thing. She went back to the woman, the headmistress, and said, I took your advice about you can have everything, and I have a full-time job, and I have a husband, and I have three children, and I'm exhausted all the time. And the headmistress said, oh, did I forget to mention that you need help? So my mother was very careful when talking to young women to say, you know, you can have it all, but you need help. But she was also careful to add help could be another spouse or partner who stayed at home. It could be a big supportive family. It could be daycare nearby. It could come in many forms,
but
that you'd need help.
So Girls Like Us, what a wonderful book you might want to give to an older woman, you know, and then maybe explore those conversations through that. We mentioned, Will, that, of course, her passion was the refugees. And together you read The Bite of the Mango. This is Mariatu Camaro's memoir about having her hands cut off by child soldiers in Sierra Leone when she was just a child. You know, very, very powerful book. She receives a Courage Award from your mom's organization. And you discover her. It looks like she's kind of just thinking by the book one day. And she turns to you and she says, I want to write about these refugees. I want to tell their story.
Yes. She had so many things she wanted to say and so many points she wanted to get across, always about education and books and learning. And to see a young woman like Mariatu, and that she came to Canada as a refugee, and she made so much of herself and she took advantage of the education. And Mom, it wasn't so much that Mom wanted to tell those stories. She wanted to get Mariatu's voice out there. But my mother wasn't a writer. And so it was only after I told her that I was thinking of writing something. And it was a few months before she died. And I said, Mom, I think I want to write something about the books we've read, about the conversations we've had, about you. And she said, oh, no, 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 you don't want to do that. You have so many other things to write about. Don't do that. The next day, Mom sent me an email, and it was a list of all the books we'd read. And then following that were occasional emails, don't forget to write about Mariatu and the importance of education, or don't forget to include healthcare reform. So I kind of like to think that Mom was sort of my co-writer in this book.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, in reading all of it, through a lot of the book, The End of Your Life Book Club, you're thinking, when are we going to have the big conversation that everybody thinks they're going to have that moment, maybe some people do, I should say, that moment at the bedside where you really have the talk with a parent that you've been desperate to have. You never have that big talk, but you have all these little talks that add up.
We never had the big conversation. And I remember thinking, we should have the big conversation. I should go over there. I should give a big speech or write a letter or do something. And actually, after Mom died, I was somewhat racked with guilt for a little while. I felt terrible that I'd never had the big conversation. Over time, a kind of peace came over me about it. And I thought, you know, it's really not about what you say. It's about how you behave. And it's also really not about what you say. It's about what you ask. And one of the blessings of the book club is it gave me a chance to ask Mom a lot, to listen as opposed to talk. And that was a huge gift. And that's the gift that I hope people take away. I hope people don't wait till the ones they love are in sort of dire mm-hmm. medical extremes, but sort of pick up the phone and say, hey, Mom, what are you reading? Or, hey, brother, what are you reading? Or any number of things. Now is that's what I want.
Well, and I'm thinking as I read your book, Will Schwalbe, that people would give anything to have had these dozens and dozens of conversations that came out of these books, you know, taken together. They are the big talk.
Absolutely. They are the big talk.
Yeah.
That we had the big talk and we had it over 2 years. Yeah. Exactly.
You know, I mentioned David Rode, the journalist David Rode, who had been kidnapped by the Taliban and was held through much of your mom's last couple of years. He's finally released and he writes the most beautiful letter to her. And he says of his release, suddenly and against all expectations, we escaped and survived. From the bottom of my heart, I wish you the same. Now, at this point, she is dying. But, of course, we have learned what a spiritual woman she is, what a woman of faith she is. She did escape at the end. You found what you think are the very last words she might have read?
Yes. She had a book that a friend had suggested to her and given her called Daily Strength for Daily Needs. And it was a book written from a Christian perspective, one page for every day of the year, Bible quote at the top, sometimes a more secular quote at the bottom, sometimes a little piece of poetry. And after her death, by her bed was that book, and there was a marker in it marking the last page she read. And the Bible quote at the top simply said, "Thy kingdom come," the shortest entry in the whole book, And at the bottom was a wonderful quote from John Ruskin talking about how if you believe in heaven and you want heaven, you need to work for it. And I'm fairly certain those were the last words Mom ever read.
What a gift.
Yes.
Will Schwabe's book about his book club of two with his mom is called The End of Your Life Book Club. Just terrific. And we'll have all the books at hereandnow.org. Will, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Robin.
Some more of the books they read: Alexander McCall Smith's detective series, The Poetry of Mary Oliver, James McBride, Somerset Maugham, Dennis Lehane, quite something. The list, again, is at hereandnow.org. Add yours. What would you read with a parent or child? Okay, 1 minute away from today's latest news, Here and Now.